This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And we have what should be a really fun show today, the Illinois Brass Quintet, which is the quintet in residence at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign, is about to head off on a summer tour. And they're here in the studio with us to play some tunes, tell us about the music, and hear a little bit about what they are doing on behalf of themselves and on behalf of the university. Illinois Brass Quintet coming up in just a few minutes on Live and Local. That was the Philadelphia Brass Ensemble and Chicago Brass Ensemble from a recording from, seems like, forever ago, that also on this recording features on some of the pieces the Cleveland Brass Ensemble. In a piece that I played because it sort of was the beginning of my own personal, fairly brief experience with brass ensemble music back in the seventh grade, where Glenn Gould, not the famous Glenn Gould, conducted that piece with those of us who played brass instruments that year. And I remember it wasn't really very good, but it was a great exposure to brass ensemble music, my first experience with it. And then Philadelphia Brass, the horn player there was the guy I wanted to be at one point, Mason Jones, and Dale Clevenger of the Chicago Brass was the reason I came to Illinois. Never studied with either one of them. Quit the horn after the sophomore year, and now I'm doing radio. And here, that was a prelude to our conversation and listening to performances by the Illinois Brass Quintet, based here at the University of Illinois. They are the quintet in residence. And according to their biography, says they were the world's first faculty brass quintet about 52 years ago, and that's something to be said. The members of the quintet are Ronnie Rahm and Jake Walburn, the trumpet players, Kaz Machala, horn player, Elliot Chazanoff is the trombonist, and Mark Moore, the tubist, and they're all in our Studio F to play for us live on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Really looking forward to hearing you, although I wonder if I shouldn't have brought earplugs in, because this is there's a very small room for hearing five pretty strong instruments. So you guys are going out on tour, some of you leaving tomorrow, yes?
Yes, actually, several of us are leaving tomorrow. We're going to be in Poland for 10 days, so at the Poland Trombone Festival, and Elliot is the featured artist and lecturer at the Poland Trombone Festival.
And that's excellent. And I imagine that part of the connection to Poland is through Kaz, that you ended up being there? Is that
yes,
part
I,
of it?
I helped to facilitate the tour and done some translating between important people who are actually the organizers. And one really unusual thing is about our tour is that one of the performances will take place in my village. This is a form of reflection and saying basically goodbye. As you probably know, I have retired from my position here at the University of Illinois. And this is one way to finish my activity.
And more than a little nostalgia for you going on, I imagine.
Yeah, it is. So it is. It's been an interesting place. Initially, when I started taking lessons on the mandolin and accordion, and some other folk instruments at the time. It was a period of, we did not have access to television. We had a very, very small radio, which worked maybe a couple times a week. And so introduction and actually acquaintance with music making was a major, major important access to form of relaxation and way to experience music making.
And have you kept up your mandolin and accordion playing chops?
I like to think of this as a opportunity to play in a venue where the listeners are a little tipsy.
So you'll be breaking those instruments out when you go back to the village.
I don't think so.
Don't think so. you all are really going on the tour as ambassadors for the university, more or less. What does that mean for the university and for you as a quintet?
Well, our main mission as a quintet at the University of Illinois is to share our love of music making, our love of brass playing, and just our love of meeting and interacting with audiences around the world, around the country, within the state of Illinois. And so it's always a pleasure for us to go out and play, because there's nothing like sitting on a stage and interacting with the audience, feeling their positive energy coming at us, which just sort of encourages us to strive to entertain even more. And we really treat it as an entertainment more so than just, you know, a solemn occasion. We love what we do, and we try to reflect that in our repertoire choices, in the settings that we play. Maybe we don't always strive to play in the most formal of settings. In fact, earlier this week, we played a concert for the Illinois Summer Youth Music Camp in the cafeteria. And the kids sitting at tables all around us, some of them less than 10 feet from us. And it's just a closeness of interaction that really we enjoy a lot. We don't take the what we do so seriously in terms of, you know, trying to be very necessarily dignified, or we're just trying to entertain and interact.
And this is Ali Chasnov, who's a trombonist with the group, and I assume that a part of this is that you hope that when audiences outside of the university see you perform and feel your interaction and feel your enjoyment of playing, that some of those folks might actually come to the university.
That's absolutely part of it. And the rest is just, you know, we're a public university. So, you know, we feel strongly that part of our mission, as it were, is to provide outreach, be, like you said, be ambassadors for the University of Illinois and leave them with a very positive impression of what we're about down here in the oasis on the plains.
Well, why don't we find out quickly what you're about musically speaking. What is the first item you brought for us to play today? Mickey
Moore.
The
first piece we're going to play is a vocal piece by a German Renaissance composer named Gregor Eichinger. He lived in the 1500s. He was a clergyman, and this piece is called Jubilate Deo, and it's a choral piece that's been arranged by Irving Rosenthal for Brass Quintet.
And you're hearing the Illinois Brass Quintet live in Studio F here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. That was fun to be so close to here to the performance here, and I think it's probably helpful that I have headphones on. Those serve as my earplugs, I think. What do you think? This was the Illinois Brass Quintet here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's great to have them in the studio for the hour here. And Mark Moore, the tubist, introduced it by saying that was an arrangement of a vocal piece, Jubilate Deo. What do you think it is about vocal pieces that they often seem to make good brass pieces?
This is Jake
Walburn, a trumpet player.
Well, I think just the setting and a lot of times the text dictates that they lay easily on our instruments. Oftentimes these vocal pieces were written for small vocal ensembles, 4, 5, 6, sometimes 10, but not extremely large ensembles, not symphony orchestras, definitely not larger choirs. So a lot of the pieces were originally written for smaller ensembles, which of course translates well for us because there's 5 of us. So I think that's probably one of the main reasons. The text settings a lot of times dictate certain aspects of the performance that we use to sort of move forward the energy of the music, and that has helped us because we approach these not only as notes but as actual words and as energetic pieces of music. So I think that's probably the main aspect of these pieces that has helped us.
Can you give an example of how the text affects performance here?
Well, this piece is Jubilate Deo, which is to the joy of the rejoicings, the glory to glory of God, and so it's a very happy and joyful and buoyant piece of joyant.
That's a good word.
I'm just making up stuff.
Let me write that down.
Yeah, would you please?
Economical. You just combine two words.
It was good. Anyway, it's a very buoyant piece, and it means a lot to us. You know, we go back historically. The trombone specifically was while the trumpet players were out on the towers in the medieval times, signaling the time of day and whether or not there was an attacking band of marauders on their way. The trombonists were in the churches playing along with the choirs, and of course the vocal sound is something that we as brass players embrace dearly because we want to not sound just like brash, loud brass players. We really want to sound like the vocal texture. And so that's that connection to me.
Yeah, it was like it wasn't until the turn of the 20th century that the trombone started to get sort of its stereotypical role of sort of loud in the front of the marching band, glissandoing like Glass's trombone or something like that. The trombone was considered the most vocal of all instruments. Now, of course, this was during the time that Ron was talking about, before the invention of valves, but the trombone was actually the only fully chromatic wind instrument. So the choices were strings or trombones to double the voices in the church. So they chose trombones.
You know, I never actually thought about that before, but yeah, that makes it, because the trombone has the slide, which has infinite chromaticism available.
Exactly.
And then some. I was actually, when you were talking, Ronnie, had in my head the picture of these big, long trumpets without any kind of valve standing on the ramparts of some castle, since you gave the image of the marauders
exactly.
coming in. And the trombonists playing, of course, then they were playing the instruments with the wonderful word of sackbuts.
That's right. Which literally means push pull.
Is that what that means?
Yes.
It was going to be my next question. Excuse me. And Elliot, when I've heard you play before, I've always noticed that it is often a very vocal sound that you have.
I totally. When I play, my original training was as a cellist, but I played the cello for 20 years concurrently with the trombone. But in my head, I'm singing as loud as I can, and I sort of picture a vocal sound at all times. I think we all do. I love what Ron said. I mean, we often get the role or the rap of being, or label of being brash and loud, but it's much more challenging to play beautiful, sweet, soft, lyric melodies. I mean, anybody can play loud. That's what we love. That's probably what we enjoy as much as playing the loud stuff is playing the beautiful, soft melodies.
I'm hoping that maybe some younger players might happen to be listening to this interview and hear you say that because, you know, younger players seem to relish playing loudly, but yet the real epitome of great music making, it seems to me, is often in being able to play a beautiful, soft sound, play it well together, listen well to each other, which is so much of what you guys do in rehearsal. Maybe we'll talk about some of the other things you work at when you work together to create the sound that you have. But first, let me mention that WILO's programs today are made possible with support from The Great Impasta, a family-owned restaurant serving foods from northern Italy for more than 25 years. The Great Impasta is now open in their new location at Lincoln Square in downtown Urbana. More information is available at 359-7377. You're listening to Live and Local. This program is your connection to local music, and it's the Illinois Brass Quintet on our show. Today, on Monday's show, rather, we'll have one of what we hope will be two shows next week focusing on the Summer Piano Institute at the University of Illinois. Ian Hobson will be with us Monday to talk about some of the programs and the recitals that you can hear during the week. And we're actually right now trying to coordinate a session where we have some of the students in the Institute play, and we will hope to hear some of those on the program next week. But why don't we hear a little more music? What is the next offering from the IBQ?
The next work we're going to play by Johann Sebastian Bach, it's called Contrapuntus Number 1. It is one of the works from the collection The Art of the Fugue. And it was arranged by Arthur Frankenpohl, who was an organist. And we have several of the contrapunti arranged by him. And this is a really valuable collection because there were several attempts to arrange the sequence of these pieces, and we believe that this is probably the best one. So we are very fortunate in that respect.
Illinois Brass Quintet on FM 90.9. Thank you. Contrapuntus number which? Number one. All three. The first finger goes up. By Johann Sebastian Bach, performed here by the Illinois Brass Quintet, who are trumpeters Ronald Rahm and Jake Walburn, horn player Kazimierz Makala, and trombonist Elliot Chazanoff, tubist Mark Moore, live in our studio here at FM 90.9 on Live and Local. Several weeks ago, Ronnie, you and Mickey were here on the show talking, I think, before you were about to do a performance. And at that time, it was not all that long after Mike Ewald had died. Mike Ewald was the other trumpeter for a long time in the Illinois Brass Quintet and, of course, longtime faculty member at the University of Illinois. And now Kazimakala is retiring and going off to other places and studying composition in Poland, as we learned the other day. So this is a bit of an extended transition time for the ensemble.
There's been a lot of very interesting changes over the last. You know, how shall I go about this? The brass ensemble, the Illinois Brass Quintet, had been somewhat, shall I say, inactive,
dormant,
quiet for a long time. And when I joined the faculty, I remember we discussed what we would like to do, and I pointed out that anything we dreamed we could do, and especially if it pertained to what we could do as a chamber group in terms of our cementing of our collegiality and bringing back an enthusiasm for brass playing as a group. You know, and of course, Michael was very, very much on board with that. Michael was was very happy to play. He loved to play. So he and I used to play duets a lot, and in addition to the brass quintet. But we brought the Illinois Brass Quintet back into our focus of attention as the vehicle to help us to help our students to see how important it was to be a part of something. Because too often, if we spend time in the practice room, nothing happens. You know that. We sit in a practice room and practice. What have we learned? We've learned how to play notes and how to make this attack work. We've learned the technical. But with chamber music, you learn the life skills that will actually bring us to any direction we choose. And the appropriateness of that is infinite. It's unbelievable. When you think about it, our students get a chance through chamber music to learn to communicate on a whole, a very significantly amplified level. So the transitions of when I first came here, came from Canadian Brass, where I was playing 130, 140 concerts a year, 240 days on the road, and came and joined the faculty here and teaching, and we reignited the fire under the Illinois Brass Quintet. And then, of course, with Mike's passing, Jake stepped in when Mike was ill, and Jake has been doing a marvelous job. He's doing really great. The students love him. He's a visiting lecturer status right now as well, and with Kaz, we've enjoyed gassing around and having a good time and playing a whole variety of music and researching what it is that we can do as a group.
You know, I think one of the things that Kaz has really brought to the quintet is a unique sense of humor, as well as a lot of enthusiasm for writing. He's written some pieces for us, which are all very, very interesting and quite challenging as well. One thing I wanted to add to what Ronnie was talking about is, you know, the quintet serves as an ambassador. It serves as an outreach. But one of the things we'd been sort of struggling for years to implement and get started was a chamber music program within the brass area at Illinois. And, it just sort of was an ad hoc, you know, catch-as-catch-can kind of situation. And with the Illinois Brass Quintet sort of being reinvigorated, when we brought Ron on board. We use that as our sort of argument, as it were, for really establishing a brass chamber program. And now it's formalized to the point where performance majors have to perform as part of their applied study in a brass chamber group, generally brass quintets most of the time, every semester. And a few semesters ago, we had 14 undergraduate brass quintets, which is I've talked to colleagues around the country, and they're really impressed that we have that active of a chamber program. The quintets do they participate in two chamber nights every semester. Some of them do their own concerts, and it has sort of opened, I think, the students, brass students' eyes at Illinois to the possibilities other than sitting in the back of a symphony orchestra and playing 15 notes, counting 600 bars, and playing another 10 notes. It's really a much more I come from the opposite background. I all I want to do is play in an orchestra. That's all I train to do. And so with Ronnie coming here and us really getting the quintet happening, it's really opened my eyes, too. You can teach an old dog new tricks, as it turns out.
Is there also a woodwind chamber program? I'm thinking just for horns to have the opportunity to play in a woodwind quintet.
Yes, there is one. Yeah, the chamber music includes also the woodwinds, and, of course, the French horn being in both the woodwind and brass quintets. Horn players are very busy.
It's a switch hitter situation.
That's right, yeah.
How did that evolve, by the way? How did the horn of all the brass end up in a wind quintet?
Well, as we know, the flute used to be made of wood, so we have the woodwind quintet title. But the horn, I think, became a member of the woodwind quintet because of its unique blending quality. So as we observe the function of the instrument in orchestral playing and so on, very frequently we play with the woodwinds, and very often it's the blending, it's plays such important role, because we could also add all kinds of colors and timbres of sound, and I think that is the reason why I think the horn ended up being a member of the woodwind quintet.
And, of course, it depends who plays it.
Yeah, very much
and
so.
And one of the great challenges for horns in a wind quintet, or any brass in a brass quintet or any brass ensemble, is learning to blend, learning to listen to each other, learning to sound like the other guy or girl in order to make a wonderful ensemble. I know that's one of your goals when you rehearse together. What are some other things that you work on when you spend time in rehearsal with each other? Mark Moore.
Well, we always work on intonation. We always work on time. And we want to, you know, present whatever the music is, you know, in a very positive light to the audience. We're big fans of modern music. We're big fans of Renaissance and Baroque music, of course. And then they have a whole slew of things that are just arranged for us that are, you know, just transcriptions that we like to do also. But, you know, my job in the quintet is to sit on the bottom and do what I can do to make everyone else sound really good. And I enjoy that job. It's a good job. And, you know, keep time, keep the pitch center. And, you know, it's an opportunity we never get in a larger ensemble. It's one person on a part in a quintet. So if I don't do my part, then no one else has done it. And if you're playing in a large ensemble, you might be relying on someone else. If it's a string section, you know, at least 13 other people are going to play those notes. And here in a quintet, it's totally you. So big responsibility, lots of fun.
And even in an orchestra where you'll be the only tubist,
yes,
you're still supported by the rest of the low instruments in the orchestra, or all the trombones making up the low brass, mm-hmm. and so on.
You know, there's an interesting component to all of this that very rarely is spoken about or addressed specifically, and that is interpersonal relationships that are the nuts and bolts of having a rehearsal that either works or doesn't. If you come in with a black cloud over your head, you may not be at your best form for that rehearsal. And so it's incumbent upon the rest of the members to massage those dark thoughts and moments away through our musical and our personal input. And learning to not be afraid to argue and discuss the things that you believe in, and even sometimes get into fairly loud discussions about it. And those are things that people don't talk about. That what do you do in rehearsal? Well, we sit around and fight a lot, but we don't really fight. We state our opinions. And we put our opinions to work musically, and we find the way that the music is going to best benefit through our input, both our emotional input and our physical input and our philosophical input.
You know, so, that's another great point. In chamber music, especially for us brass players, it's probably our only real opportunity to explore our own expression. Because most of the time, when we're not playing as soloists, we're playing in conducted ensembles, where the conductor is almost really the soloist in a way. The conductor decides how the phrase is going to be shaped. The conductor decides what the tempo is going to be. The conductor decides most of the nuances. It really gives us as brass players a chance to explore who we are inside as musicians and how we can get that emotion and that insight out and communicate to an audience. And that's, to me, that's just a blast.
I was thinking just a moment ago that y'all, they go give workshops to politicians, you know, get a bunch of people in the room who never agree with each other, and they leave the room disagreeing with each other, where you guys can't leave the room disagreeing with each other, musically speaking. You have to, before you leave the room, come together with something, which is a great lesson for not only musicians, but everybody else, too. Well,
that's the nature of what we want to bring to the students and to our audiences, is that we can transcend those differences if we focus on what we really want to have happen. And the students often don't understand that these life skills that we're sharing with them through chamber music will take them anywhere they want to go. All I have to do is translate that to the next focus. If they want to be in public relations, if they want to be in communications, if they want to write, if they want to be in even numbers crunching, it's all the, you know, it's how to make things work, how to get along, how to find the route to something that's more pleasant than just the pieces that you're doing.
Well, let's hear the next product of productive rehearsal from the Illinois Brass Quintet. What's our next choice?
The next work we're going to play for you is sort of a product of our collective striving to enlarge and enhance the repertoire for our ensemble. As I said earlier, Kaz has written a number of really interesting, challenging, and fun pieces for us. And I decided I have a really deep interest in arranging and transcribing, editing music for other ensembles for brass, either be it brass quintet, trombone choir, or even brass choir. And I did a little bit of a long-term research on American music that had sort of been overlooked. And what I ended up focusing on was music by African-American women at the turn of the last century. And I found a wealth of compositions by African-American women who were the equals in every way of Scott Joplin and Fats Waller and people like that. But because they were not only African-American at a time when our society was not as accepting as hopefully it is today, their music was not highlighted the way even Scott Joplin's and Fats Waller's music were highlighted. So this piece that we're going to play for you is by a woman whose name was Irene Giblin, and she lived from 1888 till 1974, quite a nice long life. She worked as a pianist in a department store in St. Louis, Missouri, and essentially she was there to play the piano to bring people in the store and keep them there to buy things. But her real love was writing music in a ragtime style. Unfortunately, she could not get her music played where she lived because of the politics and the social sort of repression that was existing at the time. So what she did was she sent her music off to New York City, off to Chicago, and much more open society, much more accepting. And the way she eventually got to hear her music was when ragtime orchestras out of Chicago or New York came through St. Louis, and there she got to hear her music the way it was conceived. Of course, she'd sneak some of it in on the piano, but this music was originally written for ragtime orchestra, sort of trumpet or cornet, trombone, banjo, piano, bass, maybe a saxophone, things like that. Well, this piece is entitled The Chicken Chowder Two-Step, and it features Jake Walburn on the piccolo trumpet, which is a very cute little instrument. And every time we play an audience, when he holds up the piccolo trumpet, everyone goes, "Oh, that's so cute!" You know. So my imagination on this piece is the following. It sort of tells the story of a chicken who's trying to get away from its would-be chef to avoid becoming a part of the chowder. So you'll hear various allusions to the sounds of a chicken. You'll hear various allusions to the chicken hesitating and trying to get away and running off. But it's a very, very, very ingenious piece. And Irene Giblin was really quite the equal of Scott Joplin, in my opinion. I mean, her writing is superb. And we hope you enjoy this. This is a lot of fun for us.
And this is Kosmakala's arrangement, then?
This is Elia Chasnov's arrangement.
Elia Chasnov's
yes.
Arrangement. Played here by the Illinois Brass Quintet on FM 90.9. Brass Quintet live on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. And I'll let Elliot Chasnov, who arranged that piece, tell us again. What was the name of that?
It was called Chicken Chowder Two-Step, written in 1905.
By?
Irene Giblin of St. Louis, Missouri.
That was a lot of fun.
Thanks.
It seems like you had a lot of fun playing that and arranging it.
Yeah.
And arranging
blast.
It, too. You're listening to this program courtesy of financial contributions from our listeners, the Friends of WYLL. And if you're not a member of the Friends, here's a pretty good reason to support the station. When you attend a concert which in effect you're doing right now. You experience the power of the music with a couple of hundred people, or in this case, thousands of people in our listening audience. When you contribute to WILL, you help share that experience and more with tens of thousands of people. Your gift today may inspire a passion for great music in someone that you may never meet in radio land. That's a serious impact. And here is a serious situation. We are within $158,000+ of having the money needed to bring you the service you expect from us in the coming year. The coming year, fiscally speaking, starts July 1st, just 4 days from now. So as we work to raise the remaining money by June 30th, we hope that you will please consider being a patron of the arts if you're not already, or if you can become a larger patron, by all means, we hope you'll consider doing that. You can do it by calling 217-244-9455. That's 217-BIG-WILL. Or log on to willpledge.org. And we do thank you for your support of WILL Radio and specifically of live and local, your connection to local music. We hope to get in a couple of other pieces before we have to wrap up in about 15 minutes, but I do have a question of curiosity, and that is, I wrote down a little note about the brotherhood of brass. It has always seemed to me that brass players, even more than other members of the orchestral families, whether they're flutes or violins or cellos, really have an affinity for each other. I mean, trombonists like to hang out with trombonists and like to do things together, and trumpet players and so on, and brass players as a band. Can you talk about, I mean, is that an accurate perception?
Yes, it is.
This is Mark Moore, the tubist.
The best example I can ever remember, I was on tour in Venezuela in a town in the Andes, and I swear there were only two streets to the whole town. We were doing a festival for brass players from all around South America. I was with the brass quintet. And there were about 90 students there. And just as the opening day that we were doing the festival, a man walked in and started speaking in Spanish, and our trombonist and our quintet spoke Spanish, so he was translating for us. And he was the principal horn player in the local symphony orchestra and had not been invited. And he was very upset that he hadn't been invited, and they were going to crash this party and come in and join the festival. And he's translating, and all of a sudden he turned around and looked at our horn player and our quintet. And the horn player in the quintet had gone to school with him at Juilliard with Kaz. And the Bruce Hine was the horn player in the other quintet. So this guy's name was Howard Katz. He'd lived in Venezuela for the last 20 years. No one had seen or heard from him. But he was the principal horn in this orchestra, and his wife was a violinist, and he had a coffee plantation. So I will never, ever be surprised again if I run into a brass player that knows somebody that I know somewhere in the world.
In a town, I'm just amazed that a town with two streets has a symphony orchestra.
Well, the support for the arts in Venezuela and probably lots of parts of South America is pretty amazing. They have a youth orchestra system in Venezuela that has 1 million students in it.
Yeah, that is a really amazing thing, which would be a conversation on its own if we had the right person to talk to. El Sistema.
Yes.
The system, they call it, and it's getting a lot of talk in symphony orchestras around the country, where in communities that don't have strong music programs. And so the orchestras are trying to implement something like this. And if you ever have a chance to, anybody has the chance, get on YouTube and put in El Sistema, which is Sistema, or even better yet, Youth Orchestra Venezuela.
Yeah.
Or Simón Bolívar, any of those, and you will come up with these performances by the Simón Bolívar Youth Orchestra.
That's who brought us in.
And, how that came about?
Yeah, I've been there 4 times and worked with students from the age of 10 years old. And the Simón Bolívar Orchestra in Caracas is the youth orchestra. And it's a pretty amazing ensemble.
Very,
I think, another reason, getting back to the brass player question, another reason that brass players, I think, tend to be the way they are in terms of hanging out and having fun together is, every time we play a note, it's going to be heard. If you sit in a violin, I played cello for 20 years. If you sit in a cello section, like someone said earlier, there's 13 other people playing that, and you miss a note, nobody really knows most of the time if you miss a note. And even if they do, they don't know who missed the note. But if you miss a note on a brass instrument, everybody knows.
You can't pass the buck.
You can't hide. And I think as a result, I think brass players tend to be a little bit more gregarious as a group. I'm not saying that other people aren't, but I think we tend to be a little bit more gregarious. And as a result, we might like to go out after the performance and share some embouchure water or beverage of our choice and, you know, just have a good time, because I think brass players in general are a pretty gregarious group of people. And I've been to Poland 14 times, and I'll never forget, I did a concerto with an orchestra, Polish National Orchestra. They have several different Polish national. This one was in Białystok. After the concert, the entire trombone and tuba section took me out and fed me tumblers of vodka to the point that I couldn't feel my face anymore. So I decided it was time to stop. But it's universal. I don't care where you go in the world. Of the places I've been, brass players are brass players. They tell the same kinds of jokes. They drink the same kinds of beverages in general.
Embouchure water.
Embouchure water.
I'm going to remember
exactly.
That.
Thank you. Water. Thank you.
So what's the next gregarious piece we've got?
Okay, we're going to share with you a piece that was arranged by Luther Henderson. Now, Luther Henderson was a classically trained pianist, was a jazz enthusiast, was a big friend of Duke Ellington. And Luther Henderson was responsible for arranging all those wonderful pieces for Duke Ellington's orchestra and symphony orchestra. Later on, Luther had a great career as a Broadway writer. And his most famous, towards the end of his life, he was most famous for writing the book for Ain't Misbehavin' and Jelly's Last Jam. Of course, he had done a lot of other things as well. Well, along the way, he became quite fond of the brass quintet as a medium. And he's written, arranged over 150 works for brass quintet. And what he calls his work is jazzicalization. And the structure of the music is that he's written things out so that the average classical or average good classical player could read this music and understand the style. And this is one of those pieces. This is St. Louis Blues.
Arrangement by Luther Henderson, performed by the Illinois Brass Quintet on FM 90.9. Thank you. Everybody had quite a lot to do in that piece. Mark Moore and the tuba had the first virtuosic bit, and then everybody else got a little bit of something. That was Luther Henderson's arrangement of
St. Louis Blues.
St. Louis Blues, performed here by the Illinois Brass Quintet on FM 90.9 on Live and Local. And we have just under four minutes. Does that give us
Perfect.
Time to do one more?
We have one more. We have one more. And it's another Luther Henderson chart.
And it's called?
And it's Sweet Georgia Brown.
Oh, yeah. They're flipping their pages to find the right piece. You don't have it memorized.
Here it is. One, two, one.
Thank you.
Brass Quintet on